We ended yesterday with finishing chapter 16, and at the end of the chapter there's a little summary with Lord Brahma speaking that he's now concluded his answer to the question that comes at the beginning of chapter 15. So we're going to read the questions that the demigods asked Lord Brahma at the beginning of chapter 15. So, chapter 15, texts 1 through 6. This is Brahma's conversation with the demigods is a subset of Maitreya speaking to Vidura, which is a subset of Suta Goswami speaking to the sages of Naimisharanya, which is a subset of Shukadeva Goswami speaking to Maharaj Pariksit. But Maitreya, early in this third canto, he had become an Uttama Bhagavat personality just by hearing Krishna speak directly to Uddhava, the Uddhava Gita, which is mentioned at the beginning of Canto 3 and detailed in Canto 11. The Maitreya is now this perfected soul from that experience, and Vidura, literally under Krishna's direction for him to do so, but Vidura is taking shelter of Maitreya and inquiring from Maitreya, and Maitreya is supplying answers. There's a prior dialogue that's between Maitreya and Vidura, and that is chapter 14, pregnancy of Diti in the evening, the inauspicious time in a lustful state. Diti petitioned her husband Kashyapa to produce a child, because her sister has a number of children. I don't have any children yet, so I want a child, and I want a child now. So, inappropriately, she approached, and inappropriately, he responded, he reciprocated, but then gave her warnings that because of this inauspiciousness, non-virtuous children will be born. They have been conceived and they'll be born. So Diti was very sorry. So this is going back to chapter 14. The learned Kashyapa said, because of your lamentation, penitence and proper deliberation, and also because of your unflinching faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead and your adoration for Lord Shiva and me, one of the sons, Prahlad, of your son, Hiranyakashipu, will be an approved devotee of the Lord, and his fame will be broadcast equally with that of the Personality of Godhead. So because you've done this, and we have done this wrong act, demoniac son Hiranyakashipu and Hiranyaksha will be born, but because of your lamentation and your other good qualities, your grandson will be just the opposite. And then he goes on to glorify Prahlad, topmost devotee, and so forth. your grandson will be able to see inside and out the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose wife is the beautiful goddess of fortune. The Lord can assume the form desired by the devotee, and his face is always beautifully decorated with earrings. So that's Diti and her pregnancy. Then the end of chapter 14 is, the sage Maitreya said, hearing that her grandson would be a great devotee and that her sons would be killed by Krishna, Diti was highly pleased in mind. So now chapter 15 opens with Maitreya saying to Vidura, my dear Vidura, Diti, the wife of the sage Kashyapa, could understand that the sons within her womb would be a cause of disturbance to the demigods. And by the way, that means included amongst the demigods are the sons of her sister, Aditi. As such, she continuously bore the powerful semen of Kashyapa, which was meant to give trouble to others, for 100 years. That's a long pregnancy. And a woman that can withhold pregnancy for any moment, what to speak of 100 years, it's a powerful lady. She was a powerful lady. Purport. The great sage, Sri Maitreya, was explaining to Vidura the activities of the demigods, including Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma is the grandfather of Diti and Aditi. And our grandfather, or her grandfather, would also be troubled by her sons. When Diti heard from her husband that the sons she bore within her abdomen would be the causes of disturbances to the demigods, she was not very happy. Although the last verse in chapter 14 says, when she heard that her sons would be killed by Krishna, she was very pleased in her mind, but not pleased that they would give trouble to the demigods. There are two classes of men, devotees and non-devotees. Non-devotees are called demons, asuras, and devotees are called demigods. No sane man or woman can tolerate the non-devotees giving trouble to devotees. Diti, therefore, was reluctant to give birth to her babies. She waited for 100 years so that at least she could save the demigods from the disturbance for that period. Again, powerful lady. Text 2. By the force of the pregnancy of Diti, this is like while the children were still unborn, by the force of the pregnancy of Diti, the light of the sun and moon was impaired in all the planets. And the demigods of various planets, being disturbed by that force, asked the creator of the universe, Brahma, quote, what is this expansion of darkness in all directions? Unquote. And Prabhupada, I'll read Prabhupada's purport, but even before I read it, I'll comment. His translation and his commentary of this verse matches how he rendered the fifth canto of Bhagavatam. Prabhupada made statements that were purposefully challenging to contemporary conceptions of modern science, in this case, astronomy. And it was deliberate. He explained this offline, not in his purports, but I'm doing this. Well, I'll read it, then we'll go back again. Purport. It appears from this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam that the sun is the source of light for all the planets in the universe. The modern scientific theory, which states that there are many suns in each universe, of course they don't say there's many universes either, is not supported by this verse. So the many suns and stars in the sky are so many suns, like we have the one nearby in our solar system, and there's many solar systems with many suns. That's modern scientific, not, you know, he's saying theory, they're saying fact. That's reality. It is understood from this verse that in each universe there's only one sun, which supplies light to all the planets. In Bhagavad Gita, the moon is also stated to be one of the stars, meaning reflected light. There are many stars, and when we see them glittering at night, we can understand that they are reflectors of light, semicolon, just as moonlight is a reflection of sunlight, other planets also reflect sunlight, comma, and there are many other planets which cannot be seen by our naked eyes. The demoniac influence of the suns in the womb of Diti expanded darkness throughout the universe. So I looked at Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, and he translates it very differently. This Lokapala indicates the demigods of the various planets, at least, you know, in Swargaloka. That's just one part of the universe, but they're the ones that are disturbed by the darkness. And it says there that the light within the planets of the demigods and other parts of the universe were diminished. There's no mention of the sun. There's no mention of the sun in the Sanskrit. There's no nothing within Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's narration or translation and commentary about the sun being eclipsed. And because the sun was eclipsed, then darkness in the whole universe was eclipsed. There's only one sun in the universe. That's not what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, nor is it in his translation. It's a hammer Prabhupada is bringing out in his purport, because he wanted, again offline, he said that one of the greatest obstacles in bringing or reviving faith in God is the blind faith that people have in modern science. And I think we've all had that experience. We've encountered persons that have that issue. I've been spending a little bit of time with Kripamoya Prabhu, who is a Prabhupada disciple in the UK, and maybe for 30 years his service has been developing the congregation in the UK. Probably the first 10 years was like everybody else. We just did book distribution. And then the next 30 years was congregation development. And he was sharing with me recently. It's his consistent experience that after people further start. Largely, the congregation in the UK is Indian population, and largely amongst the Indian population in the UK, it's Gujaratis. So, with that picture in mind, universally, there's two things that he encounters with people that are newly becoming Krishna conscious devotees. Two issues. One, conflict between what Krishna consciousness says or what Vedic teachings say and modern science says. And the second is residual tendencies for impersonalism. Now, I'm specifically brought in the point about Gujaratis because largely, at least my sense and experience is that Gujaratis are very much inclined to Krishna Bhakti through the influence of Vallabhacharya and the whole Pushti Marg movement or following, very strong in Gujarat. And aside from that particular, like, very prominent feature, Krishna Bhakti is, you know, so many go to Dwarka and Srinathji, and, you know, very Krishna, Valgopal, very strong. And even in Gujarat, according to Kripa Moya, there's this underlying impersonalism thing. You know, after, when it's all said and done, it's all one. So, he was expressing these two things. He feels for his service it's really important to have, to be prepared to help people understand the Vedic conclusion with regard to things that science speaks about and why there should be faith and what the Vedic wisdom speaks about and why there's reason to not have blind faith in modern science. Just because the scientist says such and such that matches what the Vedic wisdom says, we can breathe easier. It must be true. Because of our conditioning in education and acculturation and the direction, as Sariputta has analyzed, the direction that intellectuals go, Yadirasurati Shrestas, Tatat Ivi Tororjana. And the intellectuals, modern Kali Yuga intellectuals, besides being either largely Christian, they're otherwise largely impersonals. Like, you know, Gotama's atomic theory, for example, that's not a new one. And that's what modern science says. Mechanistic science is just a rerun of Kanada's atomic theory. All there is matter, and the laws governing matter, and everything that exists is just a combination of matter under the laws of nature, laws governing matter. That's it. Same thing that Kanada said. Not a new one. They think it's a new one, but it's not a new one. And they just don't make any reference to the Vedas. Kanada made reference to the Vedas. Said, see this and this and this, the other thing, and that's the support of my doctrine. So, mechanistic science eliminates, in their perspective, the necessity of even talking about God. Like, as they say, we'll put God in his place. Or without, you know, naming the names and going through the whole thing. Somebody was sharing that one of the recent books of this man from the UK,
Richard Dawkins,
said he's a modern age avatar. He's come to this world to eliminate God. That's his avatarism. Something like that. And you go, what a brazen. God doesn't exist, but he's an avatar. What a personality. Or whatever his language is. Something to that effect. You know, a messiah or something like, some language like that. To save people from God. So, there are different ways of addressing that blind faith in modern science. One of the approaches that Prabhupada took was very much like his Guru Maharaj's approach, confrontation. Direct confrontation and challenge. I was on a morning walk in Vrindavan once with Srila Prabhupada, and he was in one of those moods. He was saying, the modern scientific method is hypothesis, experiment, and conclusion. So I have a hypothesis. Like, you know, if they can have an hypothesis, why am I precluded from having hypothesis? Here's my hypothesis. On the moon, there is cool flame. Prove me wrong. You know, the offline is, that's what scientists are. They get a bunch of scientists together that say something, and then it's, you know, prove me wrong. I remember when I was going to high school, in science they brought up continental drift, and modern scientific perspective was, you know, what a joke, this is rubbish, these foolish people that speak about continental drift. That was like 8th and 9th grade science. And then I graduated from college, and next thing I knew, it's a reality. And people that don't accept it, they're rubbish and they're foolish. What, you know, besides whether it happened or didn't happen, what's going on within the realm of science? Is it really science? Just a bunch of people that get together and shoulder to shoulder, they say the same thing in cadence, and now that becomes reality. The Prabhupada would point that out about scientists is ever changing. Science, the knowledge within, so-called knowledge within science is ever changing. How can we call that knowledge? That's one of the, you know, confrontational points. But he took another approach, which is, I've got a hypothesis. Cool flame. There's light from the moon. I mean, here he's writing, it's reflected from the sun. Which is what modern science says. Okay, we're comfortable with that because modern science says it. So here's another one. It's cool flame. Prove me wrong. And then he went too elaborate. You know, normally fire is hot. But because of the particular atmosphere of the moon, that fire is cool. Prove me wrong. This is my hypothesis. Like that, he was spoofing on science. I mean, that's how I took it. He wasn't saying this is a spoof on science. He was like challenging the devotees, prove me wrong. But I took it that he was instructing us, this is the way of modern science. You just make a hypothesis. There's no evidence, like, you know, life comes from matter. Where's the evidence? Man come from monkey. Where's the evidence? Has anyone seen a monkey give birth to man? He would say, okay, it's evolution, and we'll show it by archaeology. There's no anyway. It's he, Prabhupada, took the approach of confronting blind faith in science in order to open the door for considering some other faith. In a number of different ways he did it, and this is one of them. Now, I've had discussions with God brothers, specifically Sariputta, and others, that speak in a way, not in accommodating the scientists' prospective way, but looking at what the statements are within the Vedas and coming to a different conclusion. That is, there are solar systems, and Prabhupada's language was specific to solar systems within our universe. And others say, no, 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 Prabhupada didn't say that, nor was that his intention. He said what he meant. There's one sun within the universe. In any case, there are different ways of viewing things, and one of them is the intention here was challenge the scientists. Because there's within the Sanskrit there's no mention of sun. It's just aloka, which is light. Ahata, aloka, devoid of light. And then lokapala, the demigods of various planets, were experiencing darkness. That's what the verse says. And that's how Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur translates and explains it. They didn't understand, why is there darkness in our planets? Prabhupada chose a particular path in his purport, confronting the scientists. For sure, confronting the scientists. I'm not going to try to explain that any more than what I just did. Text 3. Though they saw the darkness, the fortunate demigods said, O great one, just see this darkness which you know very well and which is causing us anxieties, because the influence of time cannot touch you. There is nothing unmanifest before you. Now we know that Brahma dies, so time touches him. So here's the purport. Brahma is addressed herein as Vibhu, and as the personality of Godhead. A little bit exaggeration, because he's Anu, he's Jiva, not Vibhu, but they're speaking of him in that way. He is the Supreme Personality of God as incarnation of the mode of passion in the material world. So in that sense, Vibhu and the Personality of Godhead. He is non-different in the representative sense from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore the influence of time cannot affect him. The way that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur expresses it is, his knowledge is not destroyed with time. He's addressed by the devas as Vetta, V-E-T-T-H-A, Vetta, one who knows. So his knowledge is directly invested in him by the Personality of Godhead, and that knowledge is not destroyed in time. It's not created in time or destroyed in time. It's given to him. It's not his knowledge independently, it's the Lord's knowledge invested in him. And that cannot be destroyed by time. Continuing. The influence of time, which manifests as past, present, and future, cannot touch higher personalities like Brahma and other demigods. We know the demigods, they also die. And just addressing the context is a little sensitive. So hear the rest of the verses and then it'll help this one. Sometimes demigods and great sages who have attained such perfection are called Tri-Kala-Gya. So in that sense, knowledge is not destroyed or created by time. It's given by the Personality of Godhead. Time, as we know it, is absent in the spiritual world. According to Sri Brahma Samhita, time, Kala Shakti, is a manifestation directly of Rama Devi, who is the internal potency of the Lord, sometimes referred to as Lakshmi or Niyati or whatever, Yoga Maya, in Sri Brahma Samhita, she's referred to in all those ways. That's very clearly beyond the influence of time as we know it. But to fulfill or to assist in the desire of the Supreme Lord, she expands herself as Kala Shakti. But when Kala Shakti, for the purpose of the Lord, is to invigorate Pradhan, the unmanifested totality of material elements, time energy takes on a different feature. Very similar to Yoga Maya, who is instructed by Krishna in the 10th canto, 3rd chapter of the Bhagavatam. Krishna summons Yoga Maya, his internal potency, and gives her some service. And her service is three. Transfer the seventh child of Devaki to the womb of Rohini. That's Balaram. Second, then you appear in the womb of Yashoda, as I will simultaneously appear as the eighth child of Devaki. And then the third service is when my father, Vasudev, carries me by the side across the Jamuna to the side of Yashoda, you will be taken by, this is before it happens, it's just a plan. She's Yoga Maya and he's giving her instruction. This is what I want, so please arrange it. You'll be brought back to the prison house of Kamsa by the side by Vasudev. Kamsa's going to think you're the eighth child of Devaki. He'll try to kill you. Don't worry, it won't happen because you're my Shakti, he can't kill you. And then you will be distributed throughout the land known by various names of Durga. So Durga is the external potency. But he's speaking to Yoga Maya. So it's one energy known in various ways by the observer or the perspective, the faith of the individual. And there's a similar discussion exactly like this in Navadvipa Dhammahatmya when Parvati, by her austerities in Navadvipa, she sees the personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya, in Navadvipa, even before he appeared, because he's eternally residing there. And he says to her, "Don't worry, Devi. You, in your original form, are my Yogamaya potency, and you're assisting me in my pastimes there. And also, your expansion as Parvati, you're assisting me in my worldly pastimes." It's one entity manifested differently. It's a difficult science, perhaps, but that's how it's to be understood. One energy, Prabhupada gives the example like electricity, can make things hot or cold depending upon the engineer making things hot or making things cold. They know how to use the electricity in different ways. Similarly, Krishna knows how to use his potency in different ways. This time this, that time that. But it's one energy manifested differently. So that's the oneness aspect, and then there's a difference aspect, so like that. So, Brahma is being addressed by the demigods in this very lofty way. Because you are in the sense of you're being a representative of the personality of Godhead, we accept you as the personality of Godhead. Because your knowledge comes directly from the personality of God, and your knowledge is not destroyed by time. That means, and then also, because your knowledge is coming from the personality of Godhead, you know things past, present, and future. So whatever happened in the past, and whatever's going to happen in the future, you already know, so please tell us. And in fact, he already knows, because he's going to tell them what happened in the past and what's going to happen in the future. And then, you know, the presence is the darkness, but here's why the darkness is there, and here's what's going to happen in the future. So now, the demigods continue. Text 4. Oh, God of the demigods. That's Lord Vishnu. But they're speaking of Lord Brahma in the sense of the representative of Lord Vishnu in this way. Sustainer of the universe. He's not the sustainer of the universe, he's the creator of the universe. And Lord Vishnu is the sustainer of the universe. But they have this lofty understanding of his position. Head jewel of all the demigods in other planets, that's like themselves, Lokanath Shikshamani. Shikshamani. So he's the chief of the demigods. The head. Shikha money, the crest jewel, or the head jewel of all the demigods and other planets. That's Lord Brahma. You know the intentions of all living entities. That's Supersoul. But he's an intimate servant of Supersoul, so he shares information like Supersoul does. Narada is addressed that way elsewhere also in the Bhagavatam. Because you're so intimately connected with the personality of Godhead, you're like the Supersoul. Not that you are the Supersoul, but you're like the Supersoul. So please tell us things that we can't understand because of your intimate connection with the Supersoul. You know the intentions of all living entities in both the spiritual and material worlds. Imagine having that kind of information at your disposal. It'd be like information overload. You'd have to have a vast computer to know all the intentions of all living entities everywhere in the spiritual and material worlds. Even to think of all living entities, but to speak of the intentions of them. It's inconceivable. It's not human. You're empowered to know such things. Purport. Because Brahma is almost on an equal footing with the personality of Godhead, he is addressed here as the God of the demigods. Yes. The Lord Vishnu is the God of the demigods. But he's addressed that way. And because he is the secondary creator of this universe, he is addressed as the sustainer of the universe. That's a stretch. But that's what it says. He is the head of all the demigods, and therefore he is addressed here as the head jewel of the demigods. It is not difficult for him to understand everything which is happening both in the spiritual and material worlds. He knows everyone's heart and everyone's intentions. Therefore, he was requested to explain this incident. It's sometimes described like that also of Yamaraj. He has a service. His service is to deliver appropriately the reactions to the particular misdeeds of all living entities. So he's got to know what all the misdeeds of all living entities are. You can't do that unless you're empowered to do that, unless in the empowerment comes from he who has that knowledge. That's the personality of Godhead. So these are very, 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 the point is, unusually powerful living entities. The demigods, they're also powerful, and they recognize Brahma, you're far more powerful than we are. We're bewildered by this circumstance. You must certainly understand the circumstance. The last sentence, why was this pregnancy of Diti causing such anxieties all over the universe? Text 5. Oh, original source of strength and scientific knowledge. Lord Vishnu is that source of strength and scientific knowledge, but as the intimate representative, he's being addressed that way. All obeisances unto you. You have accepted the differentiated mode of passion from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now they're getting a little more realistic. With the help of external energy, you are born of the unmanifested source. That's Lord Vishnu, because the demigods don't have the capacity, as Brahma has, to see the personality of Godhead. As Brahma has the capacity. He is described in Sri Brahma Samhita. He can see the personality. And the second canto of the Bhagavatam, he saw the personality of Godhead. Even before the creation took place. So he has capacity, you have capacity beyond us. You have knowledge directly derived from the personality of Godhead. You, with that, you have understanding of all living entities, so what's going on? Purport. The Vedas are the original scientific knowledge for all departments of understanding. And this knowledge of the Vedas was first imparted, impregnated, into the heart of Brahma by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, Brahma is the original source of all scientific knowledge. That's a qualifier of that statement. That he's the origin of all scientific knowledge. Like any scientist, there may be some modern scientists, whatever it is that they are able to factually know, honestly it should be stated that knowledge, if supposing they have something that's not speculative but real knowledge, where does it come from? They may, you know, give their name to something, a star in the sky or an organ in the body or like, when I had my knee problem, in the back of my knee was a bulge, and I was told that's a Baker's cyst because Dr. Baker figured out what that bulge in the back of people's knee was, so it was called a Baker's cyst. So he's the origin of knowledge about bulges behind your knee. But where does that knowledge come from? And where's the, you know, the whole, so. He is born directly from the transcendental body of Garbhadakshayi Vishnu, who is never seen by any creature of this material universe and therefore always remains unmanifested. Again, this is also dealt with in detail by, within Brahma Samhita, the manifest and unmanifest forms and features and pastimes of the Lord. There is the manifest feature when scheduled incarnations come and everybody can see him. Demons, devotees, non-devotees, the whole, everybody. And then there's the unmanifest, and the unmanifest indicates the pastimes in Goloka Vrindavan and the pastimes in Gokula Vrindavan that to an ordinary person they cannot see. But to access those unmanifest pastimes, there are specific means mentioned to experience and see the unmanifest pastimes, meaning the pastimes in Goloka, or the eternal pastimes as they're performed in Gokula. So here, this word unmanifest, you know, it's not, it's, the explanation is protecting us from impersonalism. That is, there's form of Lord Vishnu that worldly people cannot see, and therefore it's called unmanifest. Not the impersonal kind of, or notion of unmanifest. He is the incarnation of the mode of passionate material nature, which is the separated external energy of the Lord. Ending with text 6. No purport here. O Lord, all these planets exist within yourself. That's Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. But, and the stem of the lotus from Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. All the planets exist in that vertical stem of the lotus of Lord Brahma. But as the engineer and creator of, manifester of the plan of the Lord, he's described, we can say indirectly, as the planets exist within yourself. The ability to manifest them, derived from the personality of Godhead, is within yourself. And all the living entities are generated from you. Again, living entities are eternal. He doesn't generate living entities, but he generates the forms of those living entities by the empowerment of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, you are the cause of this universe. Well, he's the secondary creator, Visarga, of this universe. And anyone who meditates upon you without deviation attains devotional service. That's true. They attain devotional service to the source of Lord Brahma's potencies and the source of creation and the source of knowledge and the source of everything. So there's a few more verses, four more verses that make up the questions to Lord Brahma that the demigods asked of Lord Brahma. But it's in relation to before the pregnancy of Diti, and then coming up is, you know, the birth of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, which doesn't take place until the seventh canto. But we're just getting a picture here of this next chapter, 16, is description of the kingdom of God. So the reader of Srimad Bhagavatam, or the hearer of the Bhagavatam's message, is getting a picture of what's the goal. The goal is the spiritual world. And what's the spiritual world compared to this place? We're getting that picture. It's a very, very beautiful description of the kingdom of God. Any discussion? Yeah?
Just like Srila Prabhupada has a particular approach addressing modern things, I was wondering if you have any thoughts on how we can, you were saying, like, the children.
How we can do what?
Like, when it comes to children's education and teaching. Because the reality is that we do not have a systematic textbooks, you know, based on Srimad Bhagavatam, like the children. Is there any value in doing like such a thing? Or because we can teach them the proper perspective, you know, how to see things, as modern science says. But is there any value of developing, you know, which can form like a...
Any value in developing, make them finish a sentence. Any value in developing what? Curriculum for children that...
Like science textbooks. Like
science textbooks.
Based on Srimad Bhagavatam, different ages.
Sure, but in order to do such a thing, you have to be highly realized. Because a textbook is not just like, you know, you talk something to a child. It's a textbook. like, when I was reading this, I was thinking to write a letter to Antar Dweep or some of the other scientists that are working on the temple of Vedic, the planetarium part of the temple of Vedic planetarium, and asking them, how do you plan to address this notion? There's one sun in the whole universe. I don't think they are. I think my understanding is they're going to speak about our solar system and not go beyond the solar system. But I'd like to find out. Because the reason being, they're going to have not only, you know, ISKCON followers looking at the planetarium, they're going to have other people from all over India looking at the planetarium, they're going to have Western scholars coming to look at the planetarium. So it has to withstand pretty intense scrutiny. So, now back to your question about the science textbook for children. We don't want to prepare our children to understand something that can't withstand inspection by doubting personalities. So therefore it has to be, you know, the absolute truth. It has to be bulletproof. So that takes, I wasn't privy to all the discussions they had about the structure of the universe, but I know that there wasn't one view. There were different views. Amongst those that had studied, you know, vast amounts of direct translations and commentaries of those portions of the fifth canto and Surya Siddhanta, which is highly technical, and, you know, like astrophysics stuff, and they didn't have one view. I don't know how to write a children's textbook on things like this. I would think it would have to be somebody that has done all that study and is extremely realized and can take that elevated knowledge and put it in kids' language. But, you know, for you or me to put together a science textbook for children is presumptuous. That's my opinion.
When Dodhakarma Prabhu was here in our house like, yeah, a few months back, I was having this
same discussion, and he said...
And then he wrote Urmila Mataji asking, because I asked this question,
okay,
and because she has done part of curriculum, and even her reply was that there isn't any...
There's a need.
There aren't any,
and there's a need. It's,
yeah,
a vacuum.
Yeah.
But I'm so, yeah, at least maybe I over answered your question. If the question is there a need? Sure, there's a need. I responded by saying rather, to whoever's going to write such a textbook has to be uniquely qualified, because we don't want to write something that's, you know, that's not bulletproof. My opinion, blah, blah, blah. Here's a textbook. There's enough of that out there. My opinion, blah, blah, blah. One of the things that I appreciated about Sariputta was he could take something that is very complex and present it in all its complexity and also make it very simple. That's very unique. Most people can be real complex or real simple, but can't do both. So, and then not everybody agreed with Sariputta on things. So, what to do? You know, science textbook for children. Maybe, Dhritakarma, who has contact with a lot of scientists, could be petitioned either figuratively or literally by educators and parents and, you know, mothers and fathers of children. Can you please get your group of scientist devotees together and produce at least something that's at a children's level that can explain the following things? And it's fine with us if it's not bulletproof. If you can have a disclaimer at the beginning that says, this is our understanding. Collective understanding. And the purpose of putting such a literature together is to help children in Krishna conscious families to have a different perspective than what they're going to for certain encounter as they grow up in their educational realm, depending upon. But you know, I can't think of another person. Maybe there are other persons, but I can't think of one. Madhavendra Puri is a name, but I got what he just shared with me. He wrote to me about something, and his field is chemistry. So that's not microbiology and it's not cosmology, it's chemistry. And the two areas that are really prominent, well, three. Dhritakarma certainly can write something about archaeology for children. That's something he could do without the team. But then, you know, microbiology or microevolution and cosmology, those are the other two really big ones that, you know, rock the boat. And if it could be for someone that's, you know, not only children but adults, then, you know, there's the scientific view and then there's the Vedic view. So how do you deal with this? In language it's simple enough for children, maybe that could do it for adults too. So that's another possibility, maybe. As Dhritakarma is a maybe, here's another one. Kripamoya, because he's, you know, he's a very senior person, and he doesn't have to manage like, you know, I have to manage, and he has a really keen interest in this subject. So if something can be put together that's suitable for the congregation in the UK on issues of science, modern science, says maybe he could have a team put together something that's on a level that's for children, because, you know, it's part of the congregation. Children are part of the congregation. It's just somebody has to head a project and gather some, you know, sufficient brain power together to come up with something that's not, you know, left field opinion kind of thing. Or right field opinion, or even center field opinion, just like, at least it's in the ballpark of the Vedic conception on some essential issues. I don't have the bandwidth to do it. I have an interest, but I have companions just loaded. Those are two people. And of the two, perhaps Kripamoy would be more likely, because he's already working on something like this. He's already going down the path, preparing his congregation to address these two things. Because it's in Prabhupada, at least the impersonalism is in Prabhupada's books. So that doesn't require a scientist, just requires careful reader, careful writer, careful thinker. That, you know, maybe something else for children. How do you teach children? How do you prepare a little curriculum for children on ideology, impersonal ideology, and Vaishnavism? How does a child understand that one? than this other one. To have ideas is one thing, to write a book is another thing. You have to be really invested in it and very clear in thought and manifesting thought on paper. Anything else? Yeah?
Can you please explain about the secondary creator?
Sure. There's primary and secondary. The primary is Vishnu, secondary is Brahma. Here's what the primary creation consists of: the following. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. There's the Supreme Lord, Vishnu, Mahavishnu, and his internal potency, Rama, Devi. Just like Lakshmi Narayan and Sitaram, there's Rama and Mahavishnu. There's a reflection of his internal potency, known sometimes as Chaya, means shadow or reflection, Chaya Devi. Another name is Pradhan. Pradhan specifically indicates the total material substance that's undifferentiated, like a cloud of material energy in the vastness of the spiritual sky. So the primary creation consists of, in various steps, his transforming that pradhan into the differentiated elements. That's one part of the primary creation. And then producing, providing the living entities that are yet to have forms and species within that pradhan, another part. And then the time energy, another part. And then manifesting the unformed universes. From the pores of his skin come these little golden seeds, innumerable, and they, those seeds enter pradhan, or then mahatattva, the elements start to cover the seeds, but they're not, the word that Bhaktisiddhanta uses is conglomerating or coming together, congealing. They're just starting to cover, but there's not stuff inside. It's not like a real universe yet. It's just a seed and some covering. And then there's a whole series of other things, up to Mahavishnu expands within each universe as Garbhadakshay Vishnu, who forms this perspiration called the Garbhadak Ocean, lies in the Garbhadak Ocean, produces from his navel a stem of a lotus, and then the lotus, and on top of the lotus is Lord Brahma, and he imparts instructions to Lord Brahma how to become self-realized. And then he gives the plan of the universe in like a blueprint as part of the primary creation. He invests in Lord Brahma the power to create. He instructs Lord Brahma, here's how you create. That's all primary. And the secondary is Brahma takes the ingredients, he takes the plan, he takes the potency, he takes everything and starts putting the universe together. That's the secondary. What Brahma does is the secondary. And the primary is what Lord Vishnu does. All those steps are primary. And then, okay, Lord Brahma, on your mark, get set, go. And he does the secondary, according to the plan of the Lord. He derives everything from the primary creator. Even the will to create, or the potency to create, the intelligence, how do you put a universe together, and everything. Okay, Hare Krishna. Bhakti Jai.